Do you ever daydream? I think most of us do, though maybe in different ways. For me, it's usually while I'm in the shower. I'll catch myself pretending I'm being interviewed about a brand new art gallery I'm opening or something like that. But there's people that I've talked to that tell me they don't daydream at all. They say they don't run through scenarios in their head, they don't imagine what ifs, and that's just wild to me. Maybe it's because of my anxiety, wanting to prepare myself for everything, every outcome possible. But what usually happens is when the real moment comes, it's much easier than I had built it up in my mind, and all that worrying and planning ends up being for nothing. Still, I can't really turn it off. It's just how I am. I think there's something useful about daydreaming. I don't think your thoughts can just wheel things into existence like some books will try to tell you. But having a clear picture of who you want to be and what you want to do, that vision can help you keep focused. I remember sitting in my old apartment, staring out the window, daydreaming about buying a house one day. And somehow it's actually here. Same thing with my first art show. And while neither of these things looked exactly like I imagined, they still became real in their own way. If you're also a dreamer like me, then this episode is for you. I'm your host, Jacob Johnson, and this is the My Art Is Real podcast, a narrative journey into the lives that shape art. Today's episode, episode 63, Kevin, right after the break. As you know, this podcast is fully independent, created by me, Jacob. I do absolutely everything here, so if you enjoy the show, please consider showing some support by heading on over to myartisrael.com. There you can collect limited edition art prints that not only support the show, but support previous guests who many of them have prints on the website, as well as other art friends of mine, and you get an amazing limited edition print made in studio by me. So thank you so much for listening, and back to the episode.
My name is Kevin Schotz. I come from Bochum. It's a city in Germany, and I'm an oil painter.
Kevin grew up in a small town, surrounded by nature, far from big city noise. And that quiet space gave his imagination room to grow. He'd spend time daydreaming, lost in stories and ideas about what life might look like one day. When you look back, do you ever wish that you grew up somewhere else? Do you feel, or do you still kind of feel connected to nature?
My view now is a bit different from my view like in the 20s or probably in my teenager times. Because now I really want to go into the nature and I'm searching for quiet places again. Because everything is has become quite hectic around me, and I'm really thirsty for quiet places. But back then, when I was a teenager, I was really, I felt some sort of loneliness because I haven't been that connected to other people because I was kind of isolated. Yeah, therefore, my wish back then was to move to a bigger city to get more in contact with other people and with other influences.
Kevin had a few friends. Together they started bands, wrote songs, and kept daydreaming together.
You're always trying to orientate what kind of group might fit to yourself. And at some point I realized, okay, there's this kind of group that are a bit weirdo, artist-like guys. All of them were into music and playing music, and they were all like a bit more, yeah, they were trying to behave a bit different than the rest. I became friends to them, to this group, and we started to do music and daydreaming together. And, you know, we were dreaming of different things. We were talking in a way philosophy was like everyday talking, you know. That was really good. I like to think about that. That was a good time, and sometimes I think that's some sort of the start of what I'm doing now, probably.
And what was the sort of stuff that you guys were daydreaming and dreaming about back then? What eventually led to the falling out between all of you?
The main problem was that we were so young, and most of the guys were like, I don't want to call them selfish, but we were all together, but at the same time we were fighting against each other because everyone got their own ideas and we were thinking that our ideas were the best. So it was all like a contest all the time. The dreams were like, first of all, we were interested in finding the meaning of life, of course. And we failed, of course, but we were trying our best. And during that process, there was a lot of madness and stuff like that. And to help ourselves, we played music and we talked a lot. And eventually, these guys, the band that we had back then, I left the band a few months after we made it. So because of, you know, all this fighting between the guys and me. Now the guys are, one of them is really famous. He produced soundtracks for big Hollywood movies like Batman and stuff like that. He went to LA at some point, and you know, some point we went in contact again last year, and we had long talks, and it was a good thing to do because we lost contact at some point. So yeah, everything comes back together.
Trying to figure out the meaning of life. We've all done that, especially at that age. You can study countless different philosophies and find all sorts of meanings for life. But at the end of the day, we all have to build our own meaning. And no two people really ever come up with the same meaning. For Kevin, the band didn't last long, but that short time of creating, expressing himself, sparked something within him. It showed him how powerful it can feel to make something that's entirely from your own imagination.
It changed my ways to think about creation, you know, to create things and how important it is to create things, because I was consuming so much art due to listening to music and stuff. So, and I was really feeling that it's important to do so, you know.
But as high school went on, things started to get a lot tougher, not just socially, but at home as well for Kevin. He found himself in a really dark place.
When you're young, you think you know everything. When I'm looking back, that's definitely not the case. So, you know, my first relationship was not very good. So there was... really not, it was not going in the right direction with me, and it was making me feel really bad. So, but I didn't understand how to act, and so I went through that, and I lost a lot of friends due to that. The time with my family went bad as well, so I had to leave my house, my hometown, and my home house, and not really living on the streets, but I used to live at several places, like couch surfing at friends, and sometimes I used to live in my car when I was 18. So yeah, it was not a good time. So
during this time, Kevin found himself falling deeper into his dreams, imagining all kinds of stories and scenarios.
Most of the time, I'm listening to music, and so my fantasy was able to grow in a way that is now really important for me as an artist. I don't know, I imagined a whole kind of conversation, a whole kind of figures in my head that were, I don't know, they were not real, but thought about situations that could happen. And sometimes I've been involved in those situations and sometimes I'm not. Like I'm visiting the woods or a special forest, and then I was thinking about ages ago what could have happened in these woods, and I was exploring to find things from the past and things like that. I was doing that all the time because I was so interested in the past and in things that are, you know, hidden from the eye, but probably laying in the ground of the woods and stuff like that. So, yeah, I was imagining all the stories behind that.
This kind of fantasizing actually started when Kevin was a young Star Wars kid.
First of all, I was I was a real Star Wars kid. So I really loved Star Wars and story behind it. Like, it's not really the past, but it's as you're following the story, there's like a past in the movies and there's like light and darkness. And I love that symbols in Star Wars. So I was a Star Wars kid. When it comes to the history, at some point I got really interested in searching history by my own, like with a metal detector and stuff like that. Because, you know, when you think about someone lost something special, even a coin, and you are able to find it like 200 or 300 years later and it's still laying at the exact point, that's always rushing my imagination. What happened to that coin, or why did the person lost it? You know, like a small toy car that is in the woods, where there are people, childs are playing in the woods, and someone lost his favorite car. And I love that because it's always, you don't know, so it's always important to use your imagination. And yeah, that's what it's all about, probably.
It seems to me that the reason Kevin was so drawn to the past, so because the future felt so uncertain. Teenagers often feel this way, unsure of who they are or what their story will be. But for Kevin, these feelings were amplified with everything else going on, between couch surfing, living out of his car. The past and his imagination became something solid to hold on to. It gave him comfort when the real world felt unstable and unsure.
I think I was desperately looking for an anchor, for something for a place to rest in my mind. And it was so hard to find, because everything that was going on, like school or sports or friends, all of that was like pretty much needless for me, because I was really lacking a specific part of myself at that time. Like I said, like an anchor. And I struggled to find that. So there's daydreaming coming again. So I kind of led into daydreaming and I created like some sort of situation where I was feeling calm and relaxed, and it was all due to listening to music, you know.
Kevin was just trying his best to finish school. After that, he didn't know what would come. He was in survival mode, just trying to get through it so he could move on, start fresh.
To be honest, my goal was to survive, because I was really not in a good mood mentally. So I was really trying to get stable and to heal, you know. And that was the most important thing. I was not at the point in my life where I was like, okay, I'm ready to do something really conceptual. So at that time, there was not much. There was like leaving that place as soon as possible and starting all over again at the other place. And my dad was living in the city where I'm now, and so I made contact with him and I decided to move to his place.
He didn't always know his father. He met him for the first time when he was 15 and started traveling to the city about an hour away to spend some time with him, build that relationship. So by the time he finished school, he was able to move in with his dad. How was it for you, actually, moving to the big city after all of this?
That was really good at that time, because I was looking for something different back then, totally different to what I was experiencing in my hometown. And I totally got that with the bigger city. And, you know, I was found a new job over there and I found guys to hang out. And that was a good experience at that time. Looking back, I was not, it needed a bit more work on myself, but I didn't realize that back then. I thought, okay, everything is good now. actually, it wasn't, but, you know, back then it was a feeling of a new freedom, probably.
With a big city, a lot can change. Kevin started to immerse himself even more into the art scene, the music scene, exploring his desires to create on a deeper level. He took his love for music to the next stage, producing tracks of his own and experimenting.
So I'm always interested in discovering new things. And if there's something that really interests me, I'm hooked. So I'm doing a lot of research and I'm trying to learn all the things I need to know to do that. So, and it was producing hip-hop beats, music, like rap music, like 2011, 2012, around that. So then I started to gather information how to do that, how to produce music. And I'm not sure when I started to, you know, dig vinyls and do samplings my own from old vinyls and stuff like that, but it must have been around 2013-14.
He even started hosting his own freestyle cyphers, bringing people together to rap, building a little community.
I started producing music and I met some guys that were into rapping. And so I thought to myself, okay, so I got a spare room and I organized some turntables and we did a cypher every Saturday at my place. So I invited some guys who liked to rap, to freestyle. And I was like, playing hip-hop beats, my own productions, or just scratching, and we were recording stuff.
And of course, where there's hip-hop, there's normally graffiti. Kevin quickly found his way into that world as well. He had already been dabbling in stencil art, but soon he landed a job that pulled him even further down this rabbit hole of late-night street art. So this job you got, this first job you got, what was it?
It was a fast food restaurant. But it's a real special one because my boss back then, he was a graffiti writer. He and his crew had a deep love for Belgium and for fries from Belgium and beer from Belgium and stuff like that. And so they decided to create their own business in our town in Germany, but like a Belgian business selling food from Belgium. So we did it the original way, like cutting fries, you know, frying them fresh. So yeah, that was the job. And as I said, that guy was a graffiti guy, like hip-hop guy, old school guy, and all his people were hanging around, and he likes to search for, or I don't know if he really searched for, but the people from the town that were into hip-hop and graffiti, when they were looking for a job, his place was the first address to go to. So, you know, most of the people that were working in that fast food restaurant were from, you know, not from the streets, but they were into hip-hop. They were deeply connected to the hip-hop scene and the culture. So that was a main influence on me.
And so do you remember the first time you did graffiti? Was it like one of the guys like, hey, I'm gonna teach you how, you know, come with me. You know, what was it like?
There's a specific memory. When we created our crew back then, it was in 2012. You know, after the shift, we used to sit in the restaurant and just sketching and drinking and, you know, listening to music and talking. And at some point, a friend of mine, a bit older than me, and me, we were talking about why is there no graffiti crew that is just the people that are working in this restaurant. And it was like, okay, yeah, that's a good idea, let's do that. And at the same night, we were calling all the guys, because most of them were, you know, they were graffiti writers, so, or starting to be.
So him and his friends came up with a plan. They grabbed their spray paint cans and set out to do their first piece together.
And then we were, okay, we got the cans ready and stuff like that. And we decided to create a real big graffiti piece in the city at a good spot. And we went there and we were like, okay, we got safe phones and stuff like that. And we got checkers and we painted that thing. It was like 20 meters, a big, big, big one. And two guys were checking for us because, you know, the cops and stuff like that. And at some point, we needed to leave the place because there were actually the work cops. And I mean, like 3 hours later, we got a call from one of the checkers. And he was like, hey guys, what's going on? Are you still painting? And I was like, no, bro, we are at home, like 3 hours. And he's like, I'm still sitting here watching the scene and it's not much going on. What's happening? That's kind of my first, you know, my memory from the first one, the big one that we made. Yeah.
And how were you feeling about city life then? Being out there doing graffiti, did you enjoy it more than, you know, living back in your hometown?
Yeah, that's a good question. Actually, you know, as I loved the quiet places back then, I got them back by painting graffiti because, you know, I was like night active all the time. I was going out at midnight or a bit later and the city was quiet and all mine or all ours because we were going to all the places that people were not appreciating that much, and we were like searching for special places to paint and for possibilities to reach, you know, rooftops and stuff like that. And so the city evolved into like a big playground for us, and it was quiet, it was not crowded, and I never felt that comfortable in crowded places at that time, probably still, but you know, so yeah, I got something back from my youth, probably, that back then while doing graffiti. Yeah.
What do you think you would say that graffiti meant to you at that point in your life?
You know, it gave me a decent amount of strength because I had something to create a value of myself of, you know. So I was like, okay, I'm good at doing graffiti, so that's why I feel good, probably, because I am someone, you know. You start realizing that you are just someone in the scene. The things you're doing are just important for people in the scene, and there's not really an outcome out of what you're doing, because people that are not interested in the scene probably won't see the value of your work, of your pieces, as you do. So, but still, you know, creating graffiti, there was always, you know, the goal for me to do something very clean and to do a good style and to do really good color work in my works and stuff like that. And at some point, that took over the idea of being someone who's seen in all parts of the city. And it was more like I want to do the best works, the best styles and stuff like that. So yeah, that was like my own evolution.
He loved the graffiti scene, the late nights, the quiet streets, the escape it offered from the constant noise of the city, the sense of community, the camaraderies. It was comforting. But even with that, he started to feel a pull for something more. He loved doing graffiti, but he knew it was something he couldn't really make a living from. His future still felt blurry, uncertain, but also wide open.
Of course, I started thinking about how to establish myself, because the plan was not to stay in that fast food restaurant for the rest of my life. So I started working on making really something really good, you know, something that is usable for others, and so that people can take my productions and, you know, make good tracks out of them. It went quite good, actually. Actually, a few weeks ago, a rapper asked me about my old productions and if he is allowed to use them for his productions and new LP for Spotify and rights and stuff. And I was like, bros, yeah, you can have them, but I don't know if they are even good enough, you know. But back then, it was like meditation, you know. When you're producing, you are into that piece of music that you are producing really deep. You're really sucked in that, because you're hearing that like on an 8-hour loop probably, and you're just listening to small variations and stuff like that. And that was really meditative for me, and I really enjoyed that, and I really enjoyed, you know, searching for new samples and going to the record store. And I had a deal with my local record store that I can take all the records I wanted to sample and afterwards I could just return them. So there was no need for me to buy them.
Then he ended up having two accidents that made producing music much harder for him.
You know, at some point I had an accident. Two accidents, actually. So the first one was that a firework exploded. There was a guy shooting fireworks from his hand. He had like a launching thing in his hand, and he was shooting the fireworks, but one didn't take off, so it exploded right in his hand, and his hand was next to my head. So fortunately, he got tactical gloves, you know, like real leather and stuff like that. So his hand was all right. My head was not. So I lost the ability to hear at my left ear. So now it's like 40% probably. A few weeks after that, my computer broke down. My motherboard broke down, and all my productions went with it. So because I was kind of an idiot, I didn't think about doing a backup. So all my productions were lost, and my ability to hear as well. And so I was thinking to myself, okay, so probably I should start something new, probably. Yeah. So then I started scratching, you know. I really wanted to be a good scratcher. And yeah, that was the next thing, DJing, scratching. Not that much producing anymore, but DJing and doing something with the records and with the turntables.
Kevin was getting older, and the future still seemed just as blurry as ever.
No, not really. I felt like there's a door that started to close because I was getting older and people were settling down and got their jobs and stuff like that. At that time, I was like the day manager of the shop. So I was like running the shop by day, and I was alone in the shop, and I really enjoyed that. But, you know, I really was not my plan to do that years and years. So, but yeah, as you ask, no, there was not a real plan for the future at that moment. No.
Day to day, month to month, our lives are constantly changing. Maybe there is some cosmic order behind every event that unfolds, but I find that hard to believe. I guess I fall more into the absurdist mindset that there's no rhyme or reason to how things happen. Still, I think that every event we experience shapes how we see the world and how we're going to react next. It gives us a new way of approaching life from our own unique perspective. Nobody knew it yet, but the entire world was about to change. A global pandemic was coming, one we're still not fully past.
We have to move to the start of the COVID pandemic, probably, because at that time I lost my job. And in 2020, and I was like, okay, what can I do next? And I never finished studies or stuff like that. So I went to the university, but I never... Not seriously. So what came to my mind is, okay, I'm good at drawing, and I have this, I don't know, there's a special view that I'm able to have when I look at something. My eye is really, really sharp on things. So I can, if you give me like a plant or something, I'm able to draw that, even if I'm not practicing drawing that much. And that was something that I kept in my mind, and I knew that's an ability and maybe some sort of a card that I need to play out.
We already knew that Kevin had the talent for making art, but what was missing was finding a way to share it, not just with the people passing by his work on the street, but with the world beyond it.
You know, yeah. And when I started back then, my first series that I painted, I was the blurred series, all small paintings, like bit larger than postcards probably. And it was during the pandemic. And I thought about a topic that is personal enough to, that is Yeah, that is fitting to the situation of the pandemic, because, you know, my view in the future was blurry as well, because at that time I had no clue what to do next, because the pandemic taking part, and there were like everything was closed and everything was so different after a few months. And yeah, that was like motivating me to paint something that is close to what I'm experiencing at the moment, you know? So yeah, that's where I started.
And how did it feel during the time of the pandemic? How were you handling it?
To be honest, I lost my job in that kind of way that I was able to get payments from the state for probably 1 year. So I was there was no financial need to get a new job, and it was not possible because you know, the pandemic. So I really, it's hard to say probably, but I really enjoyed that time in the pandemic where everything was calm and closed, reduced to just a few people to talk to. I really enjoyed that because it took a lot of stress from me, a lot of tension from me, a lot of, you know, everything is, there's always a movement, always the need to improve in different things. And that kind of stopped all of a sudden.
And what exactly was it that made you decide that painting, not just on walls, but on paper and canvas, was what you should be doing?
I started painting because I knew I had to learn something new, which is potentially able to generate money for me in the future. It was not that I was set and I was in a financial mood that was like, okay, I got my job, and in my free time I like to paint. So I was really focused on painting because I needed a source of an income in the future. Probably that's you know, that's not what people like to hear, because there's like this illusion of artists that are just painting out of their emotion and stuff like that. But after all, it's not saying much about my work. It's just saying about my ambition. So the quality of my work is not attached to my motivation, because it's not, you know, it's not coming from the same source of myself.
When you start looking at Kevin's life, you can see the seeds of creativity being planted early on. That feeling within himself, that desire to express himself and find meaning through making things, has been there since his teen years, his early adult years. So while, yes, he wanted to paint in a more traditional way to build a sustainable path forward, it almost feels like this was the inevitable culmination of everything that had come before, that it was all leading to this moment. You know, I've talked to a lot of artists who love making art, but never consider it being a way to make a living. What was it that made you realize that this could actually be a path forward for you?
Due to producing music and due to having a creative mind and judging myself, at some point I realized, okay, that's good. That's something that has a value, not for sale, but in a artistic way. What you're producing is really, that's something. That's something that you can work on. So I remember that there was an exhibition, not the first exhibition I ever made, but it was in 21. The first exhibition I was invited to, the people were like standing, and, you know, like 50 or 100 people were waiting for the exhibition to open. And it was so excited. I was so excited because I realized, okay, the people really want to see art. They want to consume art. They want to listen to music. They want to go to the theater again, because they were not allowed in the pandemic. So I sold, I think, around half of the paintings I was showing at that exhibition. And I was like, okay, it's working, actually. It's not just a dream. It's not just, okay, you are painting your things and you're not planning to show them, because from the start, I was planning to show my work, to show my work to the people, to give them the opportunity to experience my work, and of course to buy them. So yeah, that was like the moment when I realized, okay, it's not that hard for me actually to show work, and that was a good feeling, obviously. So yeah.
Kevin started to see that his work was reaching more people, that even those outside the so-called scene were connecting with it, appreciating it, and wanting to collect it. And that felt great. His girlfriend then encouraged him to take it even further to expand his reach online.
Then I started, you know, my girlfriend, she was like, you really need to start Instagram. And I was like, oh no, I'm not that kind of guy. You know, I was really happy without a smartphone for a long time. I think my first smartphone fell into my hands in 2019, probably. So I was more like the old fashioned guy. And then I started Instagram and I created a website. I worked that out from scratch, how to do that. So yeah, eventually people started to contact me via Instagram or to buy works by contacting me private. So
things seemed to take off pretty quickly, but of course the path is always still pretty rocky.
Again, looking back, I haven't been able to imagine how things might turn at that point, because I was just, okay, it's so easy. I'm just painting things and I'm selling them. All right, that's a good thing to do. I will do so. But felt good. But obviously, it's the money was not, you know, I couldn't make a living out of that. But it was still, it was something to rely on for myself, you know. Yeah, it was a good thing to do so. And then, you know, I started doing Instagram, as I said, and I started the next series, the 40 by 40 series, and that was somehow the next breakthrough for myself and my work, probably.
With any creative path, there are always ups and downs. As you get older, you realize life isn't a steady climb upward, it's a roller coaster. Some moments are full of motivation and inspiration, and others feel slow, uncertain, and sluggish. We're finding Kevin here in the early stages of his career, still shaping his style, still making a name for himself. But from the start, it's been clear that his heart is fully invested in the life of an artist. He's found his passion, and I hope for him the path ahead becomes a lot less blurry each and every day. When you look forward now, when you think about the future and who you want to be, and how do you feel? How do you think of that?
But I realized I came to the party late. So, you know, Instagram changed its ways, Meta changed its ways back then. And I realized, okay, it's not that easy to reach my audience anymore compared to people that started in 2012 or like that. So I didn't really know what to expect from Instagram. And at some point I got sucked in Instagram, and now I'm about to go out again, to leave the hurricane, Instagram hurricane, probably. But back then, there was like, you know, the first thing that happened to me was like, it was an artist spotlight with the Boom magazine. I knew the Boom magazine from before my Instagram time. So I got like a shortcut on my laptop and there was Boom, and I like to click on that to check out the art news from time to time. When they contacted me on Instagram and said, hey, we really like your work, we want to do an artist spotlight with you, I was stoked. I was really like, okay, that's crazy. Of course we can do that. So I really tried to get like good quality images for them and stuff like that. And then I was like, okay, that's super, that's amazing. One thing came to another, you know?
When it comes to bringing our dreams into reality, to express emotion through art, there's no correct way. There's no perfect outcome. It's always a process of growth, always another piece, another attempt. But it's that hope that eventually each attempt will bring you one inch closer to realizing that dream.
When I'm thinking about myself, first of all, I want to be a good human. I want to be a good friend. I want to be a good brother and a good son and stuff like that. And I realize that's much more of an important value in life than being, a good or a successful artist. Because the energy you're taking from the society, from the people you love and you like to live with and to communicate with is much more valuable than the money. So at the moment, I realize when I'm stressed, I, of course, I'm not able to lay that down in my private life. So it's always, it's coming close to my relationships because my behavior is, of course, a bit different as when I'm relaxed. When it comes to my work at the moment, I'm thinking about painting large paintings. I'm thinking about distortion and colorful distortion in my work, because when I watch my recent Enjoy the White series, I see that it's not that colorful, and that's okay, because the main focus is not the color, but the state of mind that the viewers might get by watching the paintings. So that's the main goal I have with painting the series. And now it's a bit different. I'm at the edge to the decision if I want to, if I want to change my technique for new paintings, or if I want to continue with my technique. And, the things I'm thinking about are really difficult to paint. At some point, that's good and that's challenging. At the other hand, it will take more time to paint these paintings. It will take more effort. It will take more energy. And probably that's what it's all about. But, I'm a bit unsure. I need to, as you said, probably meditate about that.
Kevin's just getting started, and the work he's creating is absolutely incredible. To watch him grow in real time is a gift. I hope all of you dreamers out there find some comfort in his story, that maybe it makes you feel seen in a small way, and that it keeps you encouraged to chase after your own dream and keep moving forward, even though the future might seem blurry. Thank you so much for all of you for listening to this podcast. It means the world to me. Thank you so much for tuning in for another episode. This whole year has been sluggish in a way, trying to just keep going, keep moving into the fog. It's always like these episodes come in at a great time. They cause me to reflect on my own life and my own situations and my own thoughts and feelings. And I think it also, as much as I hope that it inspires others, they inspire me. And it kind of helps me sort through my own ideas and get these thoughts out there and come to some realizations. So I'm hoping together we can continue as, you listening to this show and me as I make it. I hope we can continue this and move forward. So thank you so much for listening. And I appreciate the support. If you want to show your support even further, you can head on over to myartistworld.com and collect some prints. They're limited edition, original art prints made in collaboration with plenty of artist friends and past guests. When you're collecting a print, you're not only getting an awesome print, but you're supporting the show and you're supporting the artist at the same time. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode.